Hello and welcome to the hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 2019, The Turning Wheel by Spelling, spelled with three L's, not a typo in case you catch it.
Please keep that to yourself.
Christy Cabral, aka Spelling, is an American experimental pop singer-songwriter and a multi-instrumentalist based in Oakland, California. When asked about her favorite albums, Cabral named Minnie Riperton's Come to My Garden, Kraftwerk's Computer World, and Iggy Pop's The Idiot. I think that explains a lot. The Turning Wheel is Spelling's third studio album, and it marks a significant departure from the electronic darkwave and gothic-influenced sound of her previous releases. On this one, she moves in a more organic pop direction and employs a variety of more traditional instruments. The Turning Wheel was released on June 25th, 2021 by Sacred Bones Records, produced by Spelling, and features Christia Cabral on vocals and a variety of instruments and a long list of additional musicians. Check Bandcamp. A reminder, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but on our blog at John Scotto, you'll find links to The Turning Wheel on Spotify and Bandcamp, so you can follow along if you'd like. Yes, we have another one on Bandcamp, so of course we highly recommend going there to check it out, particularly if you want to buy it. Mm-hmm. On to track one. Oh, first off, this album is divided into two parts, part one above, part two below. Track one on above, Little Deer. Love the build in the intro. There's this great counterpoint riff with voice and pizzicato violin.
You get this, it's Shaft-ish, but not necessarily Shaft. You can hear a huge, Isaac Hayes influence.
Yeah. And this is where I came up with Kate Bush Goes R&B.
Yes, Kate Bush is quite the call there.
Yeah. Oh, she's very, very Kate Bush influenced, but also R&B influenced and synth pop influenced and a number of other things. The variety of influences on this album is just staggering. But this one's got a great bass tone. Love the addition of the congas in the chorus. Her voice also on this one reminds me a little bit of young Michael Jackson.
You get this, once the harp hits, it kind of departs from Isaac and mm-hmm. You get that ghostly higher pitch she uses. Yeah. I'm not sure I dig the effect she's using on her voice, to sing the verse in this, though.
Is there an effect? I didn't catch an effect on it.
It's not, an electronic effect. Oh, okay. It's something she's doing with her voice. She's obviously taking it
It's to that real pitch. Thin kind of Kate Bush thing.
Yeah.
Very head voice. I have very mixed feelings about it, but it's certainly unique, to those two. But I do like how the chorus builds to the end, great horns in the outro. It's got a nice sudden stop. But she does have this impressive range, and in her higher end, she does have this very thin. She mentioned Minnie Riperton among one of her favorite albums. Minnie Riperton also had a very similar voice.
I was also thinking Eartha Kitt a little bit, but or Bjork.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But you could hear there's all these other ranges around it. Yeah. It's not just that she sticks in that consistently, mm-hmm. and it kind of keeps me into it.
Yeah.
Like I really like when her voice goes into that Dead of Winter part.
More of a traditional soul R&B soul kind of a tone.
Yeah.
I love the lower end of her voice,
which the is same.
Staggeringly
100%.
Low. On to track two, Always, nice sparse opening, nice sound effects right before the groove comes in. There's a lot of sound effects on this album.
This would be my pick for weakest, actually.
Okay. Nice groove, very late 80s, early 90s kind of R&B sound.
And there is a lot of 80s on this album.
Yeah.
And I like that she's using the lower registers of her voice here. Mm-hmm. What kills this for me is the chorus. I like the synths, but as we discussed in the St. Vincent review, just not a fan of Sheena Easton.
Oh, I didn't notice it as sounding like Sheena Easton.
Oh, yeah, it does the whole, my baby kind of
okay.
thing. Leading into the chorus.
Didn't notice it this time.
And I'm just kind of like, oh. Yo, don't do this.
But there's this great explosive sound, snare sound. Love the horn breaks and a nice sparse bridge. Great harmonies. Vocals might be a little low in the mix. Ending it with 10 seconds of crickets was an interesting sound, interesting kind of idea. On to track three, Turning Wheel. This one is a very 60s influenced chamber pop thing.
It is funny when like an album starts out and I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. I'm hoping this is as bad as it gets. And then like the third track comes and it's like, okay, all right, I can deal with this. This is good.
Great harmonies. Where I have the note, a better range. Like the groove. Love the nice sprawling piano solo.
The backing vocals are fucking great on this.
It's just a very kind of short, to the point chamber pop, very,
It's
60s sort of
very
thing.
Beatlish. I even caught some of the video, and they were definitely even going for like an Eggman and Walrus kind of, like it's very similar to that video that the Beatles did.
It's, picture, I can't think of an R&B singer. Imagine Dream Academy with an R&B singer.
There is a lot of soul here. I mean, after the first two tracks, you're not even really expecting it as much, so it's nice to hear. The horns may have been a little too on the nose at the end for this, because we get it. You're already doing a Beatle thing. There's no need to go that far.
It's almost as on the nose as sowing the seeds of love. I'll say
That's
that.
right. They do the same thing. They ended it with like a little horn solo at the end of Sowing the Seeds of Love. They're like, okay, we get it, man. But no, both of those songs are good though. This and Sowing the Seeds.
They're great songs. I love both of them. They're just maybe a little close to the source. On to track four, The Future. Nice off-kilter opening riff. Nice complex time signature. I think it's in 10 in the verse.
I like the contrast of the simple verse and but the you're saying the verse is in that
The verse, I
signature?
think it's in 10. That's what I counted. But then the opening riff is in 4, and then it goes to 10, and then the chorus goes back to 4. The chorus took me completely by surprise because it just changes the groove entirely and kind of comes out of nowhere.
And then I was like, oof, this is it reminds me a lot of Love This Giant. Saint Vincent. It's definitely one of the most original, songs here.
I like the sort of liquidy synth sound, the soft vocals in the bridge, great harmonies, nice horn sounds at the end.
Yeah, what they do with the keys, like they've got these like little kind of keys in the verse, and then just swelling up in the chorus like that with those weird.
And it's not just all keys. There's a long list of people on the
Well,
record, and a lot of them are
sure.
horn players
But of course, I'm listening for
and
the
string players.
keys. And I really like it, what's going on.
Track five, Awaken. Like how the acoustic guitars are panned. Great harmonies. It's got a nice tense rhythm. Love this sort of clicky electric guitar that comes in. It's just kind of palm metered and like functioning as a percussion instrument. Like the kind of climbing riff in the middle. Nice bowed upright bass in the last chorus. Great sound effects.
It kind of serves as a ballad for the album. I mean, you're it's a very Broadway sort of thing. So and they do get very theatrical on this, and intentionally so.
And I mean, it's kind of the overused reference with spelling Kate Bush, kind of like Bowie is with Annie. But Kate Bush, super theatrical. So that influence carries over. Track six, Emperor with an Egg. This is my pick for favorite. Great sort of angular synth riff in the intro. Love the upright bass. Great panned response vocal, as I'll call it, to the lead vocal. It's just all the way over on the right. Just love the mood and the atmosphere of this one.
Did you get upright bass just from hearing it, or was it
No,
the
I can tell by the sound. I can tell the sound of an upright.
all right,
I was a bass player for 20 years. I know the sound of an upright. Great harmonies in the chorus. Love this string riff right after the chorus. Love everything about the instrumental break.
Fucking love the "he's a bird, he's a king" yeah. part. It just
the song
yeah,
is
everything
about, a,
about it.
The song is about a penguin with an egg.
Well, right. I have in my notes. You know, I was going to make a joke about penguins, but that's it's really about fucking penguins.
Yeah, it's actually about penguins, and. The last line repeated is "I can feel a leopard seal."
Oh,
you know, kind of a sinister ending.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that it was going to head into like another direction or last a bit longer, but it was good, you know, yeah. for what it was, a closing of the first act.
Mm-hmm. On to the second half, below track 7, "Boys at School." Great dramatic opening with this nice bluesy piano riff.
Yeah. This one, like, it's kind of the epic of the album,
yeah, yeah.
you know?
And literally the longest, 7.5 minutes.
Right. You got, like, 4 parts, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Love how soft the vocal is at the beginning. And then the riff comes in the chorus, and I love that riff.
Yeah.
Starts on a piano, they bring some guitars in, doubling it. Just this great kind of proggy, you know... I'm not sure the word I'm looking for. It just kind of plays on every beat. There's a word for that. But it's this great kind of, you know, off-time prog riff. Great groove. Nice backwards effect on some of the vocals. Kind of like a backwards snare where you kind of hear it hiss before the actual hit.
Okay.
She has this on the vocal where you can kind of hear this ethereal voice come in and then the actual lead vocal. Some great synth bass. Love the syncopated drums when the riff comes back in. And I love how the groove sort of develops toward the end.
Right. Now, is this the first time we hear an electric guitar on this?
I believe so.
Because it does, it just, like, without hearing it for the whole, you know, first half yeah. of the album, it, like, really jumps out. He doesn't do a whole hell of a lot with it. But just because it's there, it's like the first thing you're like, whoa.
And there's someone credited on the album as with shredding electric guitar. I wouldn't exactly call this riff shredding.
No.
But it's you know, been, it's kind of, you know, an interest. It takes some skill. It's you know, it's a good riff. Nice kind of weird little synth part at the end. This album, this might sound a little weird, but it's a great argument for not intellectualizing creativity. Don't think about it too much. Don't try to gainsay what might work or what might be popular. Just go with whatever the idea is.
I kind of wish they went a little bigger in the closing section of it. It was very similar to the third.
Yeah.
I guess you could just say the third section just really lasted that long.
Mm.
But it felt like it was a little different, but not different enough to set it apart.
The one minor gripe I might have about this album, there are a lot of songs that kind of halfway through just turn instrumental and stay that way.
I kind of like that about it, though. I kind of like just like, you know, when we get to my favorite track.
Loved it on Boys at School, and I think there was one before that that did it. That trick got a little old for me.
Now, lyrically, I think this one really, it could be her strongest, I think. Mm. You know, it's just, you know, crucible of growing up,
right?
And some of us carry it, were than bury it, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Track 8, "Legacy." This is my pick for weakest. I do like the mix of synths in the opening. Could not figure out the time signature.
I like this one. I mean, it's a cool build to the middle, and there's these weird, funky retro keys.
There's a great groove when the rhythm section does come in. Some great harmonies. Builds nicely in the middle to some nice sound effects.
Yeah.
Nice off-kilter groove in the second half.
And I like the way her voice just flies over the soundscape. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Just doesn't... It's kind of like the last album we reviewed, the Lava LaRue album, where there were those 3 songs that just didn't go anywhere. This one just kind of doesn't go anywhere. You know?
I was fine with what... You know, there were some, I agree, that should go... That I felt should have gone further. But this one, you know, I think it's a middle track, so it's just what it was.
Track 9, "Queen of Wands." Love the opening strings. Synth pop was a surprise. This is a bit of a hint at her old sound.
Reminds me a bit of the intro reminded me a lot of Tracy Bonham, but then again, anytime you play that many strings, I don't know, like this, I'm going to think Tracy Bonham.
Right. But love the dark tonality, the syncopated snare hits. Love the atmosphere on this one. Great sort of classic 80s electronic drum sound. The instrumental break gets very tense and kind of maddening. Reminds me of the score for Beyond the Black Rainbow or Stranger Things. It's got that kind of vibe to it.
I was thinking like Bowie's Black Star.
Cool, though.
But yeah, it's very just out there and jazzy.
Great sound effects toward the end.
I wish it was just a full instrumental, honestly. Just go all the way. Nobody seems to do that anymore.
Well, instrumental music is very niche. On to track 10, Magic Act. Nice chaotic opening, nice off-kilter, you know, opening riff, great electronic drums. Love the soft, low vocal. I love, you know, as I've said with a lot of people, I love the lower vocals. The lower end of people's registers are the better parts for me. Love the piano riff. Love how there are real drums faded in midway through. You go from this very clearly electronic drum sound to these real drums being faded in. Great guitar sound. This is another one with electric guitar.
Yeah, it kind of loses its punch, but I think it's better playing on this one than the previous.
Like the build in the middle, the repeated lyric goes on maybe a bit too long for me, but love the guitar solo and these great classic, you know, analog synths at the end.
And I definitely like these tracks over the pop tracks, though, where they're just working on building an atmosphere.
You prefer the second half, then?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
See, I'm the opposite. I like the first half. I can't believe I'm saying this, but the second half gets a little dark for me. I kind of like that more upbeat, kind of more classic sound of the first half. Track 11, Revolution. Nice groove.
This would be my pick for strongest.
All right. Nice groove. Like the chaotic sounds in the beginning. Nice off-kilter kind of guitar and violin thing. They kind of play off of each other. Love the big riff after the first chorus. Beginning of the second verse is nicely sparse. Like the groove picking up toward the end. Though it reminded me of another song I could not think of the name of. Nice horns in the instrumental break. Like how that part builds. And there's some great chaos at the end.
Oh, yeah. I love just that whole boogie like bridge that they do. And actually, it's more of like the climax of it all than a bridge. Okay. I was kind of hoping it was going to go somewhere, but the fireworks were just like, wait, what?
And this is very much the climax of the album.
It is. It is very much the whole classic format of an album that we actually haven't called out in a while, have we?
No.
It feels like it's been a long time since we've had someone just do the structure of an album properly like this, where climax... I almost wanted to do reference the new zombie Mint. Takeouts to Newman from last week.
Yeah. Well, on to track 12, Sweet Talk. This is the denouement.
Yeah.
Nice, soft vocal. There's a nice vocal effect where it's kind of like echoing over her voice. Got a nice build, some great harmonies. But it's just this kind of nice, mellow, short song. There's this great theremin sort of sounding synth.
It feels a lot like how St. Vincent ended. I'm trying to remember which album. I think if it was Marry Me or Actor, with the very basic song, you know, simple and some strings.
Yeah.
And it just kind of fades out.
So do you recommend it?
You know, it's a mixed bag, you know? Like, if you can get through some of the, you know, pop in the early parts, I think they're... you'll be rewarded greatly. So I'll say yes.
I definitely recommend it, even though the second half kind of bored me a little bit because the mood kept being kind of somber and kind of overwrought. But that first half is beautiful, and it's just this great mix of influences and sound and atmospheres. Interesting that we were kind of split on it. Anthony Fantano, who is, you know, a YouTuber who's a very well-respected music reviewer, is how I found out about this album. He gave it a 10, which is extremely rare for him.
Oh, wow.
He says, like, strong to decent to weak with his numerical reviews. he gave Daddy's Home like a decent 9. He gave this one a 10, like a solid, unquestionable 10.
And it's interesting. It says a lot for the album that we disagree on it, but have both recommended
it,
but for different reasons.
Right. It says a lot about the scope of the album.
It does. It does say a lot about it.
And that's it for The Turning Wheel. Until next time, we'll be revealing The Blue Elephant by Matt Berry. Can't wait for this one. I know Matt Berry from initially the IT Crowd.
Yes.
Boba Fett. He's also on the TV version of What We Do in the Shadows.
I was going to say, I forgot about him in Boba Fett, but...
He was the robot.
Yeah, but What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's the guy from Flight of the Conchords, his character's TV version. Mostly known as a comedic actor, but also a very talented musician. We'll be revealing his album next week. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.